If you are entering the programming world, you will hear terms like code, front-end developer, and implementation. In the mortgage world, you're going to hear terms like down payment, rate, conventional, balloon, fixed, and adjustable, just to name a few. Don't be intimidated by all the jargon. I can break all of this down into one simple rule of thumb. Write this down. Learn it. Live by it. When it's time to buy a house, pull this rule back out and make sure you stick to it. Here it is. When it's time to shop around for a mortgage, go for a 15-year fixed-rate mortgage with at least 10% down and a monthly payment of no more than 25% of your take-home pay. Yes, that's a mouthful. So let's break it down into a few pieces so you can better understand each part of that rule. 15-year fixed-rate loan. A 15-year loan will get you out of debt 15 years sooner than a 30-year loan. Shocking, I know. Becoming and staying totally debt-free as quickly as possible should always be the goal. Many home buyers simply sign up for a 30-year home loan like it's their only option. It's become a default loan term because it offers a slightly lower monthly payment. That kind of short-term thinking will keep you in debt for the rest of your life. With homes, cars, and anything else, you should ask how much instead of how much per month. The few hundred bucks you may save each month on that mortgage payment will cost you tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars in unnecessary interest payments over the course of 30 years. And don't tell yourself that you'll take out a 30-year loan, but pay it off in 15 years. This might sound like a smart plan, but it rarely works out like you expect it to. Something else will always seem more important each month. So all those extra payments you thought you'd make will end up going to vacations, extra restaurant meals, and the kids' sports fees. If you plan on paying it off in 15 years and you want to pay it off in 15 years, choose a 15-year fixed-rate mortgage. If you can't pay it off in 15 years, you're trying to buy more house than you can afford. You either need to save for a bigger down payment or lower your expectations to better match your financial reality. 10 to 20% down. Speaking of down payments, you should put at least 10% down on your home. If you can put 20% down, you will avoid something called private mortgage insurance, PMI, which is paid to the lender for securities that are necessary when taking out a mortgage. If you can avoid PMI, you should. It's extra money you don't need to spend. If you put down less than 20% initially, be sure to keep an eye on your loan-to-value ratio as you start to make payments. That basically means how much of your home's value you own versus how much of your home's value you owe. Once you've paid off 20% or more of your home's value, you can have the bank drop the PMI. Don't trust the bank to do this automatically. You must watch it for yourself and alert the bank if necessary. Monthly payment no more than 25% of your take-home pay. When it comes to your monthly payment, you don't want it to be more than 25% of your take-home pay. This may sound conservative, but if it's any more than that, you'll have too much of your income going back out the door in the form of mortgage payments. That's when you become what's called house poor. I spoke with a woman after an event in San Antonio who told me her mortgage payment was close to 50% of her family's take-home pay. The monthly obligation was such a point of stress for her. She said she felt like they could never have any traction with their money because of their large monthly mortgage payments. Later, she emailed an update to her situation. They moved because of her husband's job and decided to purchase a smaller home with a lower monthly payment. She said it felt like she could breathe again. She was still able to live in a wonderful home, but it wasn't pulling all their hard-earned money out of their hands. She realized that she valued the peace of mind that came with a responsible mortgage more than she valued the impressive-looking appearance of her old home. I don't blame her. I choose peace any and every day over stress and worry. Now, one important thing to note when calculating your monthly payment, remember to include PMI, if applicable, property taxes, homeowners insurance premiums, and homeowners association, HOA fees. Sometimes HOA fees are rolled into the payments, but not always. Depending on where you live, you could find yourself looking at an extra $100 or more a month just in HOA fees. Know what you're getting into before you buy. The right time to buy. I hear people talk about the housing market all the time, usually as a justification for buying a house they can't afford. But Rachel, it's a buyer's market. We'd be crazy not to take advantage of these prices and low interest rates. The hard truth I share with these hopeful home buyers is that if you're not personally ready to buy, it doesn't matter what the housing market is doing. You don't want the market driving your decisions. You want to drive your own decisions. Sure, you want to take advantage of great home prices and lower interest rates when you can, but that should only be when you're already financially ready to buy. When are you ready? So what makes you ready to buy a home? First, you need to be out of debt and have a fully funded emergency fund of 3 to 6 months of expenses. If you have 2 car payments, credit card debt, student loans, and no savings, buying a home will drive your stress levels through the roof. There's no chance of that house being a blessing if you're pulling your hair out trying to make the payment every month. And yes, I know you're probably going to have to pay some rent if you aren't paying a mortgage, but it's still worth it. Owning a home increases your risk. There's no landlord to call when the roof starts to leak or the HVAC goes out. You'll be on the hook for a world of new expenses from the day of owning that perfect home. The truth is, it's only perfect if it doesn't break your financial back. And that's exactly what'll happen if you're already overloaded with other debts. Second, you need to have a solid down payment of at least 10%, but 20% is better. This down payment needs to be completely separate from your emergency fund. Never leave your emergency savings at the closing table. Buying a house introduces a whole new world of potential emergencies, and your emergency fund needs to be in place to protect you. Third, you need to be ready to take on a payment of no more than 25% of your take-home pay on a 15-year fixed-rate loan. We've already talked about this, but I'm serious. Do several mock monthly budgets based on your new loan amount. Be realistic, too. Don't cut your budget to the bone just to make the numbers work on paper. We all know that's not how life works. If you have all of these things going for you and your family is ready for a move, then you could take a leap knowing you're making a wise choice. If you aren't where you need to be with these three things, you may have to put home ownership off for a year or two until you get to a place where buying a home is a blessing, not a curse. This may not be your ideal timeline, but if you temporarily put off your feelings and emotions and approach home buying in a smart way, then the next 10 to 15 years are going to come with far less worry and stress, all because you lowered your risk. I don't want to be Debbie Downer because owning a home is so exciting. However, I want you to do it wisely. By doing these things a little more slowly than most people would, you will love the life you have set up for yourself because stress and worry won't be a part of the equation. When not to buy. While I'm a fan of home ownership, there are times when I would suggest not owning a home. One of those times is when you are between the ages of 18 and 22, or college age. The last thing a 19-year-old needs is to worry about a mortgage payment and property taxes. Don't put that burden on yourself at this time in your life. Instead, this is the time to rent, rent, rent. You'll be past this phase of life in 4 to 5 years at most. That's not enough time to own a home and get the investment out of it. Now, for those overachieving college students who do make a good income while in school, it might seem like a good idea to buy a home instead of throwing your money away on rent. Slow down. Your college years and the few years right after graduation are full of life change. You can't be sure where you will want to live, where you will get a job, how much money you'll make, or if you will get married. Any one of these things could dramatically change which house you buy and how much you have to spend. The best option for you collegiate, high achiever types is to rent cheap, stay out of debt, including student loans, and pile up a huge stack of cash. Financially, your big goal should be getting out of school debt-free. Anything over that should go to savings for a while until the dust settles after graduation. If you get a good job quickly and you're ready to settle down in a house, you'll have a fantastic down payment ready to go. Another time not to buy a house is right after you get married. Those first 6 to 12 months are full of change and adapting to a new life together. Owning a home and having to deal with all of the headaches that come with it add unnecessary stress. Use that time to get to know each other better and to prepare yourselves financially to buy that first home. Buying and owning a home requires solid teamwork if you're married. So focus all your time and effort during those first several months on building a quality relationship instead of a house. Last, if you know you will be moving in a couple of years, don't buy a home. A home is an investment, and you'll need to plan on sticking with any investment for at least 5 years. That way you can ride out any ups and downs in the housing market and turn a profit when you sell the house. If you're going from city to city every couple of years, it's more of a hassle to buy a home and then try and sell it quickly. Your life is already hectic enough with moving so much. Settle the chaos by renting a great home until you're ready to stay in one place for a while. Terrible mortgage options to avoid. When you start shopping for a home loan, you're going to hear a lot of bad mortgage options. We've covered guidelines for what you should look for in a mortgage. Now let's look at some of the big ones to avoid. Adjustable rate and interest-only loans. Adjustable rate mortgages, ARMs, are terrible loans that were common in the 2000s. They were also a big reason why we fell into a recession near the end of the decade. Here's how they work. Instead of a fixed interest rate, which means you know exactly how much you're paying in interest over the course of your loan, your rate changes or adjusts periodically. That means the rate you agree to at closing could be much lower than what it is a year or two later. These loans leave you at the mercy of volatile interest rates that can drive your monthly payment up every year. Word of advice, just stay away from ARMs. Interest-only loans were also popular for a while, and they were often paired with ARM loans. With an interest-only loan, you're only paying, you guessed it, the interest. That means you're paying out hundreds or thousands of dollars every month, but you're not actually buying anything. If all you do is make the monthly payment, you never gain a nickel of equity in your own home. In fact, it's not much different from renting, but you're still assuming all the risks and expenses of home ownership. Plus, you have to deal with trying to sell it before you can move. You're better off renting than taking out one of these loans. 80-20 loans. When I told the story of my friend who bought a house with an interest-only ARM loan, I said he had an 80-20 loan. This is when you actually take out two different loans, one for 80% and another one for 20%, which basically acts as a down payment to help you avoid having to pay PMI. This is 100% financing, which means the buyer puts nothing down at all on the house. At its heart, the 80-20 loan is a creative way for someone to buy a house they can't afford. How do we know they can't afford it? Because they have to borrow the entire down payment. Balloon mortgages. The last big offender I want to mention is the balloon mortgage. With a balloon mortgage, you get a loan that looks inexpensive and doesn't require much money up front. However, the balloon refers to a balloon payment that is due at the end of a specific term. So, you might be making low payments for 5 to 7 years, but the balloon comes due and you have to write a huge check all at once. Surprise! Think of these as time bomb loans, because you never know what will be going on in your life when the balloon comes due. That's too much of a gamble for anyone to take. The hidden costs. My grandfather used to say, the cheapest and easiest day of home ownership is the day you close on your house. That's definitely not how it feels when you're sitting at the closing table, seeing all of the numbers written out in black print and signing your name 100 times, but it's true. My grandfather knew that buying a house meant more than just making the mortgage payments. When you're buying a home, you have to keep in mind that you will need to furnish it as well. And then there's heating and cooling units. Replacing an HVAC can be as much as replacing a car. Then there are the expected but essential costs, such as paying the water and electric bill every month. There will be needed repairs around the house from the roof to the foundation and everything in between. And that's just on the inside. Don't forget about keeping up the yard and your property in general. Buying a house is costly, but owning a home can be even more expensive. Love your house. There are so many positives of home ownership. You get to build lasting memories in your own space, design and decorate everything perfectly to your tastes, and, in most cases, watch your property value and therefore your net worth increases over time. You can love the life you live and live in a house you love without wrecking your financial future. Buying a home isn't complicated, but it does take time, patience, and discipline. Making the right decision may take starting some new habits, and it may mean breaking some bad ones. I just want you to make the most of the dollars you have by staying out of debt, making wise choices, and ensuring that your home is a blessing instead of a curse. Habit 6, think before you spend. Chapter 12, spending on purpose. There are some stores you don't appreciate until you're an adult. One of those stores for me is Williams-Sonoma. Once I got married and had a home, this store became a relevant and exciting destination. I was once in a Williams-Sonoma store shopping for a gift for a friend when I saw a set of pots and pans that I wanted in my kitchen. The quality was excellent, and I made a snap decision to buy them. While I stood there, I envisioned using my new set of pots and pans and feeling great about my decision to splurge on some new kitchen necessities. Reality hit me hard when I looked at the price. That little movie running in my head, using my new pots and pans in our kitchen, came to a screeching halt. Just because I had the cash to spend didn't mean this purchase was a wise decision. Even though this set of cookware could be a great decision someday, I realized it wasn't a great decision that day. I did one of the hardest things in the world for me, a spender. I walked away from the purchase. Having the discipline to say no to yourself, even when you have the cash in your pocket, is one of the hardest things about handling money. You see, choosing something good over something bad is easy. Anybody can do that. The hard part is when you have to choose between a good thing, great pots and pans, and a better thing, putting that money towards something else. That's when you have to keep your guard up and push through to the wisest decision. Acting rich. Spending money is a subject that is near and dear to my heart. There is absolutely nothing wrong with spending money when you have the money to spend. Going on vacation, upgrading your house, eating out, and shopping are all ways you can use money to enjoy your life and create memorable experiences. But there is a counterbalance to our spending. How we choose to spend our money affects our present and our future. The truth is, for a growing number of people, there is a gap between their lifestyle choices and the actual cash they have on hand. Best-selling author Thomas J. Stanley captured this gap perfectly in the title of his book, Stop Acting Rich. Acting like we're wealthy when we're not only leads us into debt and takes us further away from where we want to be. With every spending and saving decision, we're moving ourselves closer to financial success or financial distress. Financing happiness. Lifestyle choices are a big reason so many people struggle with money. Far too many people want to live a life they can't afford. They drive cars they can't pay for, wear clothes they charged on a credit card, and eat out more often than they should. They chase after a dream of happiness that they see on TV, in their coworkers' lives, or on their long-lost college roommate's Facebook feed. And when they don't have the actual cash on hand for the few things they want, they rack up a pile of debt trying to finance their way to happiness. The problem is, none of these things ever leads to the joy and fulfillment we expect. Too many people confuse fun with happiness. You can buy fun, like a great vacation or a night out on the town with friends, but you can't buy happiness. Happy is the feeling of hanging out with your spouse, a special weekend getaway with your best friend, or the first time your child grabs onto your finger with her tiny hand. Those are moments that move us forward, the ones we remember forever, and none of them are for sale. Needs versus wants. When it comes to spending money, there is a difference between needs and wants. Food, shelter, utilities, clothes, and transportation are needs. You need food to survive, a safe place to live, clean clothes to wear, and the means to get to and from work. Those are considered your basic needs. If you have these things, even when times are tough, you'll live on to fight another day. Online streaming services, cable, fantasy football leagues, and a Halloween costume for your dog are all wants. You'd be surprised just how blurred the lines get between needs and wants, even if you stick to the necessities listed above. There can be a lot of wants hidden in those needs. For instance, you need a car, but do you need a brand new car with heated leather seats and a premium sound system? No, that is a want. You need food, but do you need to eat steak dinners every night? No, that is a want. A delicious want, but still a want. When I'm talking about needs, I mean the bare bones of those needs. Put all of your purchases through this test. This will help you prioritize your buying decisions. Again, there is nothing at all wrong with buying some wants, as long as they are a responsible part of your overall plan. I don't want you to walk 10 miles to work every day and eat ramen noodles for dinner every night. I just want you to make sure you're taking care of your real needs before you start getting too fancy with your purchases. And when money is particularly tight, especially now that you're not using debt anymore, right? It's helpful to really think through and identify your basic needs. That way, you know exactly what your money priorities are each month. Grocery shopping. How do I shop for groceries and eat healthy on a budget? Grocery shopping can be a black hole in our budget because buying food is part of everyone's life. This is especially true if you prefer healthier food, local meat and produce, or organics. Let's start with the basics of grocery shopping. Make a list. A shopping list will always help you stay on track. I use the Notes app on my phone and make a list before I go to the store. Not only does it help me avoid impulse purchases, but I also love deleting items off the list once I have them in my cart. It's so gratifying. Making a list also helps you manage the expectations of kids. When children start having opinions about the foods they want, we all know the grocery bill has the potential of going up $50. And that's just for after-school snacks. Many kids will do all they can to pressure you into buying things you and they don't need. Setting the expectation up front with your child that you're not going to buy anything that's not on the list will help eliminate some of the tantrums on aisle 5. But only if you live up to your end of the bargain. That means you don't get anything that's not on the list either. That's easier said than done, I know. Think of your grocery list as an extension of your budget. You're the boss, so you can make whatever choice you want about what you're going to buy at the store. You just have to decide before you leave home. This will help you stay accountable to the list and your budget. Meal planning. I'm a huge fan of meal planning, and if your life is busy, this is a must. This includes planning out your meals for the week, which also helps you figure out what you need to buy. Meal planning is like budgeting for your food. Knowing the groceries you need to buy a week at a time changes how and where you shop. This also helps reduce impulse buying and junk food purchases. Plus, taking this approach lends itself to batch cooking to help you save time during the week. If you're making something that'll give you 2 meals worth of dinners, meal planning helps you figure that out. If I know we're going to make a big pot of white bean chicken chili, I know I will have leftovers I can eat for lunch or even another dinner. And when you plan out what you're going to make in advance, you have the chance to save a little more by looking for the best deals on all the ingredients. Buy smart. Smart shopping isn't only about what you buy, it's also about where you buy. We all know certain stores are more expensive than others, so be mindful of that. Maybe one store has better quality meat, while another's produce is perfectly fine and responsibly priced. You can save a lot of money just by shopping around for different products at different stores. Shop at the store that suits your budget and priorities. If buying organic, shopping in wider aisles, or driving a shorter distance is worth paying a little extra, and you have that money budgeted, do it. Simply prioritize what's important and what you can afford. For example, I live in Nashville, where there are 2 main grocery store chains that compete pretty seriously. One prides itself on lower prices, while the other promotes a nicer, more upscale shopping experience. I personally value the experience of shopping and going to the store that's closer to my house. So it's worth a few extra dollars to me to shop in nicer stores with a friendlier staff. I'm certainly not against shopping at the more cost-conscious store, but the more upscale store is my go-to grocery place, even though it costs a little extra. You also want to consider how much your time is worth. Ask yourself, am I saving enough money to justify running around to 4 different stores for the best deals every week? Some people who do this end up spending more on gas than they save on food. Even if you do save money in the long run, sometimes the savings are so insignificant that the convenience and time savings are worth the few extra bucks you'd spend at one store versus another. Again, think about what you value and plan around that. If shopping at the nicer, more convenient store is your preference, and you don't want to drive around looking for the best deal on each item, then just accept the fact that you may have to buy a little less in order to make that work. Organic. There are many reasonable but differing opinions out there when it comes to buying organic. It can be pretty entertaining to listen to people on opposing sides of the argument. One person needs to know what kind of grass the goat ate before she will eat the goat cheese, and the other person eats frozen pizzas for dinner every night. If you're interested in buying organic food, you might ask yourself if your organic interests are all or nothing, or if it makes more sense for you to choose organic for only some foods. You should spend time researching the cost and true benefit of organic produce, dairy, eggs, meat, and even snacks. Then, plan around the organic items that are important to you, but don't be scared to buy the non-organic versions of other food items. For example, we have a great organic grocery store in my area, but I only drop in there once or twice a month, or less, to pick up a couple of things that I particularly like. I prefer to do my shopping at my regular grocery store. Sure, I have some organic-minded friends who are shocked by this, but I refuse to give in to the social pressures to buy organic exclusively. I'm not going to pay $5 for a roll of paper towels, no matter how biodegradable they are. If you value organics and have an all-or-nothing approach to it, then your food budget is going to be higher. At least admit to yourself that you're prioritizing organic groceries above other things on your budget. You won't magically have more money just because you are focused on super clean eating. So, if you want to spend more on food, then you'll have to take that money out of other areas, like clothes or entertainment. If that's what you value, go for it. Just don't assume that you can pay for everything you value at once. Coupons. When it comes to saving money at the grocery store, it would be silly not to include coupons. It's basically free money. Factor in how much time you're spending versus how much you're saving, though. Some people can spend 5 or more hours a week poring through coupon websites to save $5 on their weekly grocery bill. Depending on where you are in your financial situation, that may not be the best use of your time. If you're working on getting out of debt or saving for the emergency fund, coupons should be your best friends. Every dollar you save at the grocery store gets you $1 closer to being debt-free. But if you are out of debt and funding retirement, saving 75 cents on juice boxes probably won't make or break your budget. Growing up, couponing was a part of every Sunday afternoon in our house. My mom was a pro at finding and cutting out coupons from the newspaper. At that time in our lives, it was wise for mom to take the time out each day, find deals, and take advantage of ways to save money. It would have been unwise for her to just go and buy whatever she felt like, no matter the price. One warning about coupons. They only save you money if you are going to buy the product in the first place. Coupons are a form of marketing. Companies put coupons in newspaper inserts or in the mail because they want you to buy their stuff. So if you buy something you don't need just because you have a coupon for it, you're wasting money, no matter how much you save. Buying in bulk. Another way to spend wisely at the grocery store is to buy in bulk, such as at a warehouse club. Walking into an enormous warehouse full of pallets stacked floor to ceiling of things I could buy does my heart good. I love this kind of store. A warehouse club is a little slice of heaven to a natural spender. The key with buying in bulk, much like couponing, is to only buy things you know you need and will use. It's easy for me to get carried away in those stores, so I have to be on guard. Winston and I will never use 5 gallons of honey mustard, no matter how good of a deal it is. However, we buy all of our paper goods, meats, batteries, and dog food in bulk. We shop at a standard grocery store once a week for most food, but the warehouse store is still a great place to buy things we know we need to have on hand all the time. Of course, factor in your bulk purchases into your monthly budget. If you know you're going to take an expensive trip to the warehouse club every other month, your budget needs to reflect that. You'll spend more money on groceries in the months you stock up on toilet paper, toothpaste, and cases of soda. If you don't plan ahead for it, the trip to the warehouse store will wreck your grocery budget for the month. This is another example of why you need to do a new, original budget every month. Last, make sure you get your money's worth out of your club fee. Don't buy a membership at one of these stores if you're only going to use it twice a year. Make sure the membership fee is worth the investment. If you aren't saving more money per year than the actual membership costs, you're just throwing away money. Eating out. One of my favorite things in the world is going out to eat. It's a huge weakness for me. I'm convinced if I didn't live on a budget, this is one thing that could make me broke. A night out with Winston or friends at a great Nashville restaurant with appetizers, drinks, and a great meal is my definition of a perfect night out. That's probably because we rarely ate out when I was growing up. Money was tight for so long that we had most of our meals at home. I think that makes me really appreciate being able to go out and eat now. Priorities. The decision to go out to eat all comes back to priorities. Are you being realistic about your ability to eat out? Is it important enough to you to sacrifice other areas of your budget? That's how it works. Saying yes to one thing means saying no to another. Nobody can do it all. If going out to eat regularly is a priority for you, then you must accept the trade-offs of this decision. At the very least, eating out regularly should bring down your grocery bill. If you're spending a ton at the grocery store and going out every night, something's off. If you're on a tight budget, but you really want to eat out occasionally, there are easy ways to save money at restaurants. You can eat at a nice place and still order responsibly priced items. Some restaurant portions are often bigger than normal, so consider splitting an entree and getting an additional side salad. You could also cut out the appetizer and dessert. And, of course, an obvious way to keep some cash in your wallet is to opt for water. You may think this sounds cheap, but if you need to save money, these are great, responsible tips to use when you go out to eat. Eating out can be hard to say no to, especially if all of your friends are going out all the time. You will see pictures on social media of all their great meals, and you'll probably get invited to join them from time to time. But remember that you have to do what's best for your life, not theirs. If there is a season that you have to cut back in this area, do it. Sure, it's a sacrifice, but it'll bring you one step closer to your goals. Convenience. With busy schedules and hectic lives, sometimes it's easier to pick up dinner on the way home from work or go out to eat on a whim. However, these impulsive meal choices end up costing you more money. The cost of convenience may be more than what you want to pay. If you're a family of four and you choose to eat out at a responsible restaurant, you'll be lucky to get out of the restaurant, any restaurant, for under $50. Do that twice a week for a month, and you'll spend $400. If you make the average annual household income of $50,000, that means you're spending a full 10% of your income on restaurants. This is why it's crucial to plan your meals, both at home and at restaurants, each week. There is no perfect science to this. You need to be mindful so you don't get caught in the expensive, although convenient, dinner trap. Adding expenses to your family's plate that you don't plan for can bust the budget in a hurry. Home decor. Decorating our homes and buying furniture can quickly bust a budget too. At times, it was hard for me to accept the fact that I could only decorate one room at a time when Winston and I moved into our first home. I had so many visions for what home could and should look like that it would be easy to get carried away at the furniture and home stores. You probably don't need a decorator. Here is some home decorating advice I've picked up. First, you don't need a decorator. Now, if you can afford one and that's what you choose to spend your money on, then do it. But again, saying yes to a professional decorator will mean saying no to something else. This decision could cost you a lot of money, so be sure you know what you're getting versus what you're giving up. Don't rush when making decisions on things for your house, even small, everyday additions. You can use great resources like Pinterest, magazines, and even friends. Take your time and make a plan. Don't buy bits and pieces on impulse that you won't like when you put it all together. Then, with your plan in place, make and stick to a budget. Paying cash for your decor and furnishings will force you to move slowly and carefully. The cash habit also makes you a better, wiser consumer. Again, homes are an easy place for comparisons to sneak in. You have to remember that the way your house is decorated isn't going to change your life. Of course, you want to love your home, but don't let comparing what you have with what someone else has steal your joy in the present. Repairs, updates, and upgrades. Winston and I have a list of anticipated home expenses. This includes everything from updating our living room decor to washing the windows and repainting the trim outside. We have a running list of things we need to do with an estimated total cost next to each item. Then we work our way down that list. As the money comes in, we knock something off the list. When we were redoing our living room, we had a budget for what we wanted to spend. I often underestimate how expensive things can be. Something as basic as nice curtains and blinds seemed to cost what a semester of college tuition used to. Having that budget in place not only ensures that we're spending only on what we can afford, but it also forces us to make better decisions. If I had the "let's get everything we want" mentality when we were redecorating our living room, we wouldn't put a dime into our retirement accounts for more than a year. At one point, I remember feeling like I wanted to buy everything I saw, but the budget and a little common sense didn't let me do that, so I had some choices to make. If you are a creative person and enjoy making things, there are endless options on how to decorate a home. If this is you, I'm jealous. Seriously, I don't have a creative bone in my body, but I have so many friends who have such a creative eye and can refinish furniture they found at a garage sale or make accessories to hang on their walls. One of my best friends actually came in and helped me sell my home. We went to TJ Maxx, I told her my budget, and she helped me pick out things that would work for my home. If you have friends like that, ask them for help. Getting a creative friend's help can get you further cheaper than you could on your own. Just be sure to pay them something for their help, even if it's just buying them lunch. Your decisions determine your destination. We make a number of decisions every day that will affect our budgets and ultimately our futures. It's crucial that you take the time to think before you spend your money. It's not enough to have a budget every month. That's good defense, but you need a strong offense and defense to win most games. The same is true for money. Know how you'll use your money and when and where you should spend it. Having a budget, a true spending plan, will help with this. This habit will also help you discern the difference between needs and wants, because you'll have to make daily decisions about what will and won't get your hard-earned money. A budget doesn't tell you what you can't do, it shows you what you can do. Making a plan for your money only increases your options. Buying groceries, eating out, and maintaining a home aren't the only areas where we need a spending plan. These are everyday choices we make. We also need a spending plan for things like clothes, holidays, and vacations. Can you say cha-ching? We can easily overspend on those things, can't we? Let's take a closer look at these areas of spending so we can plan, save, and enjoy. Chapter 13. Don't spend yourself broke. One day I came home from a long shopping day with a smile on my face and some bags in my hands. This hadn't been just any shopping day. This was a shopping day when all the stores at the mall were having sales. I saved $70 that particular visit to the mall. $70. Think of all the extra desserts and appetizers I would be able to buy with all that money. Winston and I crossed paths as I walked through the house to the bedroom to unpack my shopping bags. He knew I had been shopping and was curious about what I had bought. The first words out of my mouth were, "Babe, you won't believe this. I saved $70 today at the mall." Winston smiled and said, "That's great. How much did you spend?" $150, I said. "But listen, I saved $70. He laughed. "Yep, that's about right. When you say that, I don't hear that you saved $70. All I hear is that you spent $150. He knows me so well. If I'm not careful, I can fall into the trap of spending money just to save money. I'm a task-oriented shopper. I rarely go somewhere to browse. I know what I need and where to find it, and then I go get it. If I need a new pair of black shoes or an extension cord for our house, I will accomplish that mission. What gets me in trouble so often are sales. You would think sales were a good thing, and they can be, but there's something about a sales sign that gets my heart pumping. And that's true for a lot of us, isn't it? It's so easy to get distracted by what we can save that we lose track of what we can spend. In the interest of saving money, we spend money we never planned on spending. So just be aware when you see those bright, big sale signs in the store windows. Sales are a good thing, but only when you are planning to buy the item in the first place. Shopping until you're broke. When it comes to shopping, you can quickly save your way to broke if you're not careful. Much of our unhealthy spending happens when we $25 ourselves to death without thinking. We make a quick turn into the coffee house drive-thru, randomly get a car wash, or make last-minute runs to the hobby store for something. It's easy to spend without awareness. Choosing to think about a purchase and managing your impulses will prevent any thoughtless drifting from your spending plan. Buying online. Online shopping is a wonderful thing. I don't have to leave my house, navigate through traffic, or fight parking and crowds to get what I want or need. But there are ways shopping online can lead me to spend more money than I intended. One big danger with online shopping is that it totally removes the element of spending actual cash, which we've talked about before. Spending cash is powerful. It causes a flash of emotional pain where we hesitate to hand that money over sometimes, even if it's a wise, planned purchase. Using a credit card softens that emotional pain quite a bit, but shopping online nearly cuts out the pain completely. You can spend $1,000 or more just by clicking one single little button on Amazon. They don't ask if you're sure. They just take the money, put the item in a box, and send it to your house. Listen, I love online shopping, but we have to be super careful here. Don't buy on impulse and make sure all those purchases are reflected in your monthly budget. Otherwise, Amazon and other easy buy sites can really bust your budget. Also, be aware of the flood of email deals that come from your favorite stores. I get about 20 emails a day from different retailers showing me what their latest products are and what's on sale. When we voluntarily put our addresses on a store's email list, we're asking these companies to flood our inboxes with advertisements. We knowingly invite the daily temptation to buy stuff into our lives. Will Rogers once said, "Advertising is the art of convincing people to spend money they don't have for something they don't need." And that couldn't be more true. So be careful. An email deal is just like a coupon. It's only a good deal if you need the item in the first place. It's scary how easy buying online is and continues to become. In some cases, it's only one click away. Keep your guard up and discipline yourself to stay on track. Social media and app traps. Retailers know how much time we spend on social media, and search engines know our general interest based on what we have searched for online. Put that together and you get ads targeted directly at you for something they think you might be interested in, right in the middle of your Facebook and Twitter feeds. You can click a link on your newsfeed and 2 minutes later you've bought something. It's easy to be impulsive with the ads that now show up while we're scrolling through our social media feeds. Even the apps on our phones can unexpectedly cost us money. Smartphone and tablet apps that allow you to buy things like upgrades or lives on a game can cost you more money than you realize with a small, one-time, or recurring fee. You can start using the apps for free, but it won't take long before you encounter an add-on or upgrade feature that may just cost as little as 99 cents. Over time, however, those add up, and you may not even be aware that you're doing it. You may find that those extra lives you've been buying for your favorite game aren't actually worth the $20 a month you're spending. The parent trap. When a family is trying to get out of debt and take control of their money, the ones least excited about the changes are the children. Mom and dad start tightening up the budget and begin paying off their debts in full force. They put some money in savings and start becoming wise shoppers. Of course, when they start saying no to themselves, they will start saying no to their kids too. If those children have been used to getting whatever they want, they aren't going to be enthusiastic about this part of the plan. When it comes to money and kids, more is caught than taught. The best way to teach your kids to be wise with money is to be wise with money yourself. Every decision you make for yourself, you're teaching your children how they should handle money. The fact is, you can't expect them to win with money later if you aren't doing what it takes to win with money today. Who is the gatekeeper? Rule number one when it comes to spending on your children is this: kids don't get to choose what you spend your money on. I've talked to far too many parents who tell me the long list of things they have to buy for their kids. No, you have to clothe, feed, house, and protect your kids. You don't have to buy the latest video games, a designer purse, and cell phones. Many parents understand the difference between wants and needs when it comes to their own purchases, but then they throw the principle out the window when it comes to their children. Your kids have needs and wants just like you do, and a wise spender and parent knows the difference. Expect your kids to whine. It's what they do sometimes. If they figure out that a little whining will turn your no into a yes, they'll push that button every time they want something. If you say no to something they want you to buy, be prepared to stick to it. You aren't simply teaching them about money here. You're teaching them about boundaries, too. They need to know where you draw the line and that they aren't allowed to cross it. Part of your job as a parent is to teach them that money is finite. If you say yes to everything they want, you're setting an unrealistic expectation for them that they will always be able to have whatever they want. When they're grown and gone, they'll carry that mentality into adulthood. And when their incomes are unable to provide the things they need, they'll turn to the quick and easy solution, debt. By teaching them limits today, you're protecting them from foolish decisions and piles of debt tomorrow. Don't be afraid to say no. Drawing boundary lines that are determined by your budget is one of the best ways to help your children grow into high-functioning, fully capable adults. Buying for your kids or for you. Since I was born the year my parents declared bankruptcy, I didn't have a lot of new, fancy things as a little girl. I wore hand-me-down clothes from my sister, and the only shopping trips we took were to consignment sales and secondhand stores. We didn't eat in restaurants often, and our vacations consisted of camping trips and afternoons at a little amusement park near our home. My family's financial situation is different today. When I look at my daughter, all I want to do is buy her the cutest stuff that's out there. It's not because she needs or even wants these things. It's because I want her to have them. There's a big difference. This feeling is a trap, and it can lead you down a dark road of overspending on and spoiling your kids. There is a difference between wanting your kids to have a better life than you did and trying to live vicariously through them. If you have budgeted money and you want to take your kids on a great trip or buy them something spectacular, do it. But if you find yourself feeling some internal pressure to buy them things that you always wanted when you were a child, then something's off. You may be buying that item for yourself, not for your child. In addition, as parents, we feel the pressure to live up to or outdo what other parents are doing for their kids. All that we have discussed at the beginning of this book about quitting the comparisons is going to be true here as well. Your family doesn't have to look like and act like everyone else. Doing what's best for your family in the present is what is going to be best for them in the future. Holidays and birthdays. Another time you're going to be tempted to spend tons of money is around holidays and birthdays. One way to do that is to budget for Christmas every month, just like you'd budget for a big once-a-year insurance premium. You know the yearly expenses coming and how much you'll need to spend, so you divide it by 12 and add it to your monthly budget. If you usually spend $600 on all your Christmas gifts, for example, just save $50 a month year-round. Then, when the holidays roll around, you aren't in a panic. Instead, you have that cash set aside just for gifts. Your kids are going to survive if they don't get everything they want. Kids are resilient. They may make a wish list a mile long, but 5 years later, they won't remember what they got for Christmas when they were 9. But they will remember piling in the car under some blankets as the family drove around looking at Christmas lights. Memories aren't usually made from a heap of plastic junk your kids find under a Christmas tree. They're made out of the time and attention you pour into your children. Staying away from debt during Christmas is key. Don't let the February you hate the December you. The holidays don't give you a pass on good money management. Stick to that budget to ensure that you truly do have a happy new year. For many families, birthdays can be an even bigger problem area than Christmas. Remember who you're doing it for. Your one-year-old doesn't care if you have a perfectly themed, over-the-top party complete with food trucks. He wants a fresh diaper and a fistful of birthday cake. The party mentality tends to escalate every year, with parents always trying to outdo what they did the previous year, or worse, trying to outdo what other parents did for their kids. I'm convinced that most of the time, these elaborate parties are more for the parents than the kids. In the world of comparison living, this can be a sticky trap. Your child's birthday should be a celebration of his or her life. Don't turn it into an opportunity to one-up your friends. Vacations. Vacationing is an area where you can spend wisely if you take the time and plan well. The most important habit you can get into when it comes to vacations is to only take trips you can afford. Your income will first go to your needs, then what you have left can go towards things you want, like a great vacation. Know what you need. One of the main reasons people feel compelled to take big vacations is to get away from work for a while. If your main driver is simply to take a break, I want to encourage you not to get too carried away with vacation planning. I've seen some friends approach their vacation planning like it was their full-time job. If you need a break from work, why would you want to turn your vacation into an even more stressful, deadline-driven job? You could return from home more tired, broke, and stressed than you were before you left. And I've never heard anyone say, "The kids and I just got back from 10 days at Disney, and I feel so relaxed and rested." Know your vacation motives and plan accordingly. If you really need to relax for a few days, a long weekend getaway in a nice, quiet cabin may do the trick for a lot less money. But if you do want the full, crazy, active, week-long destination vacation with the whole family, then go for it. Just be warned, this isn't the kind of trip you'll be able to do on impulse. Trips to see Mickey usually take months or even years of planning. And you know what that means. Budget, budget, budget. From this day on, taking a big, expensive vacation on a whim is probably not going to happen. I'm sorry. I wish I could say otherwise, but I can't. If the only way you can spontaneously go to Hawaii is either by wiping out your emergency fund or putting the whole thing on a credit card, that's probably not a great plan. Both of those are terrible ideas that can crush you financially. If you want to take a $6,000 trip 12 months from now, then it's time to get